Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Finished yet? It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
All right, lads. So thankfully, the inter-county game at senior level is safe to continue, but there's been a bit of confusion about this. The GAA fixed their underage fixtures, obviously with the under 21 or under 20 All-Ireland final this Saturday and loads of hurling and football underage games. But then it came out that the letter from NPHET to the government had only allowed for senior inter-county games, and the government, I think, had got this one wrong and sent the message to the GAA. So where we are at now, Ger, is that the GAA had to release a statement, and they said, following clarification from the Department of Sport around the staging of inter-county fixtures, GAA confirmed that as of midnight this evening, that was last night, Tuesday night, all minor under 21 games competitions are paused until further notice. The under 20 final will not take place, and they allowed some under 20 hurling fixtures that were fixed for that night to go ahead. So there we are. People aren't happy about this, Ger. Yeah, teenagers are allowed to sit beside each other in school, but they're not allowed to play sport outdoors. I suppose we are in a lockdown. What side of this are you coming down on?
I feel awful for the players involved and the work that they would have put in over the during the lockdown and obviously getting themselves going after the club championship finished, and managements that are involved. If the GAA had have had this statement on the Monday, you would have been very confident that both counties would have been able to get their under 20 panels to play that final last night, even though there was a round of Leinster hurling. I know the Dublin under 20 hurlers played up in Antrim. They fulfilled the fixture. Lads delighted to play and wear their county jersey. And yeah, I'd be just gutted for the fellas, Woolly. At the same time, you could probably imagine the meeting in government buildings with NPHET, and there was probably a suite of sports and elite sports, amateur sports. Are we elite? You've got hockey, you've got AAL rugby, League of Ireland soccer, and it seems like they just said we can only pick a couple here. So
yeah.
And that's my thinking if I was in the room, and you know,
the bare minimum was allowed. Even golf has been they've got rid of golf, the safest bloody one of all. I think they're just determined to push us all into our houses, and that's it. But look, Kieran McKeever's not happy about this, Connor. Mark Poland isn't happy about this. Kieran is over the Armagh under 17s. Mark Poland is involved with the Down under 17s. Kieran McKeever says this is bullshit. These players have been doing everything to the letter of the law this past 5 weeks to give themselves every chance of playing at this level, and their parents have played a massive role also. They're more at risk in school catching the virus than playing sports. And Mark Poland said, left under 17 training buzzing last night after a great session, after seeing the morale and excitement amongst a group of young lads who are looking forward to representing their county in 3 days' time. Can only imagine how they're feeling now. You know, when they spell out this kind of stuff, Connor, there was confusion around this. This is probably where the most disappointment lies, that the GAA had fixed those fixtures for, you know, going forward.
Yeah, and just to echo what kind of, I was listening to your show last week with Kieran McKeever, and he was just kind of saying how much of a breath of a fresh air it was to be able to get players back in the pitch and how much they enjoyed it and all that sort of stuff. And to have that taken away from them is just, as Gerard said, you just feel so sorry for the players and for everybody involved, but particularly for the players. And the thing that's most annoying kind of for me about this is the messaging, really. And we've addressed this before. Like, there was an issue with GAA messaging before, but this is more on the government side of things. Like last week you had Leo Varadkar saying, you know, maybe not for the first time, going on a solo run and suggesting that the championship won't be able to go ahead under level five, despite an effort having making provision for that. Then that would change on Monday night. You have no mention of it in the Al Martin speech. Stephen Donnelly had to be asked about it. He says intercounty, and he doesn't make any mention about distinction between, you know, senior or underage. And then on Tuesday, obviously, with a lot of questions being asked, and the GAA, through no fault of their own, happened to react to what happened the night before, happened to say that underage isn't allowed after all. So
yeah,
I don't know. It's the confusion around the messaging that has kind of annoyed me. And I think the less clarity and the more confusion to have, the less buy-in you're going to get from the people involved. So it's perfectly understandable how Kieran and Mark feel, and especially how all the players involved. And, you know, you mentioned Galway and Dublin there. They were looking at an All-Ireland final this weekend, and now that's been taken away from them as well. So just feel so sorry for them.
For some reason, the GAA has been getting the boot put into it big time since this. You're not on Twitter, Ger, but I'll give you an idea. Like, I mean, there's people attacking the GAA for the inter-county season continuing. The GAA are following NPHET, you know, advice. NPHET have allowed the GAA season to go through, and the government have, yet the GAA is being attacked and being told the GAA should do the right thing and call them off. Why would they call them off when the public health advice is to allow them? It doesn't really make sense. You're better off not being on Twitter, Ger, because it's completely toxic. The loud captain, Bevan Duffy, didn't really help matters the last day. He was saying, after Loud got absolutely humiliated by Cork, that there hasn't been any testing at all, which I can't get my head around. You know, and that got loads of headlines and loads of traction and, you know, more excuse to put the boot into the GAA, etc. And then I was looking at a clip for Mary Horgan. She's a professor and she's part of the GAA's COVID-19 advisory committee. She was on Off the Ball the other morning, and she said routinely screening players without any symptoms is not currently something that we would recommend at all. If there's a case or a cluster, rapid testing would kick in at that time. So, like, I mean, you've got Bevan Duffy talking about something that he knows nothing about. Like, if a Loud player tests positive, the GAA will pay for rapid tests for the entire Loud squad, you know, and then the players deemed as close contacts will step out and isolate and everything, and that's the protocol.
On the testing, Willie, and fucking, I know a lot of people have been tested at this stage. I had a couple of sniffles about 8 weeks ago. I just rang the GP. I recorded the half 9 in the morning. I had my test by 10 to 4 the Monday afternoon, and I had my results by 5 p.m. on the Tuesday, negative, thankfully. But it was a very, very quick system, I have to say. And from a GA point of view, like you say, guys are healthy, guys are fit. If there's a need to get the rapid testing done, well, that's why Mary Horgan is talking about that rapid response that the GA COVID Advisory Committee have set up. And from what I gather from the listen to one or two people I know, I'm expert, when David Fitzgerald got his backroom staff, himself, and the Wexford players all tested, with one or two of the fellas were showing symptoms.
Yeah.
All done and dusted in 24, 30, 30, 36 hours, and off everyone went with their business. In terms of the Loud captain getting his bit of a mention, I guess, in the media, unfortunately, there's just a what would you call it, a dramatization of a lot of what the media do says that ads who are doing a media show here. but just the national media.
I find myself totally conflicted. I've been given out about the media. I'm completely aware of what you're saying here.
Yeah. So, but the now this is only me probably being a bit smart, but like I seen the highlights of the Cork game and look at. Maybe if the Loud lads were maybe more concerned about doing things a bit better on the field, they might have come out of Parky Cueve with a bit of a better performance as opposed to focusing on other things that are wrong. But anyway, that's a bit of a side issue, you know.
Yeah, and Longford have given a walk over to Cork is another one this week. So Longford have said that this one is a dead rubber. Porrick Davis had said it's absolutely not a dead rubber at all. The Longford County Board said the realism that we're not going to get promotion, we're not going to affect anyone getting promotion. So there was a decision to be made Monday evening that we're putting an expense and everything else on Cork by bringing him up this far. And for what? Like, Conor, there's so much wrong with that statement because, number one, they could get promotion. Now, Longford's chances of the promotion are probably a little bit slimmer, but Derry could get promotion based on results. Like, if Down lost to Louth, yes, it's against the odds, but they lost at home to Louth last year. Derry would probably beat Offaly. And then you have a situation where if Longford beat Cork, who are already qualified, who would probably send up a second strength team, you know, potentially, that Longford could turn them over at home. The idea that they're worried about Cork travelling, that's Cork's decision to make, surely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it seems not long ago, Willie, we were given out about communication from the Longford County Board about the situation that happened in the club's cup championship, and they haven't covered themselves in glory here either. I mean, the issue I have with that, so first of all, we're not going to affect anyone else getting promotion, right? So, like, well, how long did you look into this for a start? You know, like, I mean, you've kind of outlined the odds there. It's a long shot for, you know, the results to affect it, that let's say Derry might get promoted, but it's still a possibility.
Yeah.
So who makes Longford judge, jury, and executioner to be able to you know, make that decision? It's not theirs to make. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like we might get into the Waterford situation a little later. Why they're not sending a team to Antrim this weekend? But I would have far more sympathy with their plight than I would with Longford. That they seem well. You know, we've decided that our interest in the league ended last weekend, so we're just going to put an end to it here, and who cares what's going to happen to everybody else?
Yeah, I did. You know what? I was even looking at that Waterford thing, and I don't want to give too much airtime to all these teams just deciding to pull out, because I don't know. I just think if we spend so much time talking about them, we're not talking about the bloody football. I just thought the Longford one was definitely interesting because it genuinely affects the division. And I would be livid if I was from Derry. I would be livid if I was a Derry player that these lads won't even, you know, show enough respect to the competition. And if they lose to Cork, that's grand. And if Derry don't get promoted, but geez, at least finished out. You're at home. You've pulled out of a home game. It's bizarre. It's preparation for the championship. I can't comprehend what Longford have done. There's no doubt about that. There's another bit of news around the protocols here, Ger, that only captains are allowed lift the cup. So it looks like we'll get into this Kerry game in a while. Like, Kerry are going to be league winners this Saturday at 2:00. And of course, this match is on a day before Dublin and Galway. They're the three teams really that are in the shake-up to win Division 1. And Kerry could have it won on Saturday, which would be making the Dublin and Galway game a complete dead rubber, which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. It's completely illogical. And I saw a good one on Twitter, Gerard. So you're missing out on Twitter sometimes, Jerry. You're doing the right thing most of the time. But a fella replied back to me and said that if Kerry win the league on Saturday, the Dublin-Galway game is a dead rubber. Why don't the Dublin and Galway county boards put out their under-21s as senior teams and play the All-Ireland under-21 final? Because it's on TG Cahir at 2:00 on Sunday. Perfect.
It's clever outside of the box thinking, definitely, Wooly. I don't think it's going to happen, but it certainly is clever from whoever got back on it. You know, Galway and Dublin are senior teams. They're looking to get another decent game of Winter County football, 70 about 80 minutes, as it tends to be these days, under their belts, to kind of sharpen the axe a bit going into championship football. albeit Dublin probably won't get a proper game until maybe they face Meath or something like that in a possible Leinster final or further down into the All Ireland series. But no, just going back now, not to be going over some of the stuff you already said, like, you have to play the games, and the integrity of competitions are just thrown out the window. It's the easier option to say, oh, well, you know, it's just not fair now, and some of the lads, and there's a risk here and a risk there. Like, we all know what the risks are, and I've listened to Mary Horgan a couple of times. Well, she has talked about the risk-benefit analysis and the benefit of playing inter-county football far outweighs the risks at the moment in terms of the societal benefits, in the same way that representing your county, leaving your house, doing your parents proud, putting on the jersey, albeit it's a Division 3 or 4 game with Longford and who was it, sorry?
Longford and Cork, yeah, Division 3, yeah.
And Waterford against Antrim, the Division 4. You have to fulfil the fixtures for the pride of the whole thing. So it is definitely disappointing not to see those county boards put the squads out, but I guess it is what it is.
Yeah, that woman, Professor Mary Horgan, she's brilliant. Like, every time I hear her talking, like, I mean, she's logical. She's not full of hyperbole and drama and everything. She just breaks things down perfectly normally and go, yeah, but there's no, like, and then I suppose the media get hold of one thing and it'll, because it's obviously driving huge amounts of traffic, dramatizing this. And then you have Mary Horgan who looks at it and goes, well, that wouldn't really make much sense for us to test healthy players. And then you're thinking, Jesus, yeah, this isn't actually, you know, these headlines from Bevan Duffy are not the drama that is being forced on you by a lot of the media, to be honest. Like, just to go back to the captains lifting the cup, Connor. So David Clifford is the Kerry captain. So GAA are obviously very concerned, you know, and rightly so, because of the celebrations we saw from the club county finals. Now, Kerry winning the league will not have, you know, they won't be celebrating on the streets in Killarney. They can't get into a pub anyway, so I can't see how they're going to be celebrating. But it's interesting. So David Clifford is the only player permitted to touch the cup. This is how serious the GAA are taking all this, that as part of the protocols, it has to be left in the presentation area after it's lifted. So no, I suppose they can't do a lap of honour because no one's at the game. Like, I mean, that's the reality of it. But the point I'm making, Connor, is that the GAA are taking all these things very, very seriously. And if players are casual contacts, they can't all lift the cup one after another.
Yeah, and to be honest, Willie, that's probably on the back of, let's say, whether the GAA is guilty of it or whether there are individual clubs guilty of it or county boards, but it may be a laxness regarding protocols, you know, that happened in county finals and stuff, whether it was, you know, no social distancing in crowds and stuff, or whether it was, you know, players coming, you know, players' families coming onto the pitch when there was 200 supporters allowed. So I'd say they're, you know, they're very conscious of having to put the proper protocols in place for the inter-county game. And I'd say it's just more streamlined operation in inter-county as well to make sure that there'll be no hitches and that stuff like this, that protocols will be observed. But yeah, it is going to be a really weird one. I just, like, what does David Clifford, you know, send us, you know, some steps in the stand in Tralee and just lift it and have to leave it there? Do you know, like, it's
well, that is exactly what he's going to do. Yeah.
Just another strange set of circumstances for very strange times, I suppose. But listen, it's like, you know, Kerry, there'll be a bigger picture for Kerry, I'm sure. So they
exactly.
Probably won't worry too much about that.
No, I don't think they will. We'll move on to football now anyways, lads. I'm sick of talking about that coronavirus. Carlo, the next topic, Ger, the great entertainers. Who would have thought this? Carlo 217. Now, huge score to run up. What I nearly fell off my chair when I saw Carlo 217. Right, I've seen them put up decent scores before. Sligo 215. What is going on with Carlo defence, Ger? What are you doing? You're destroying this defensive system.
See, I tell you, it was a very entertaining game, Willie. Nobody at it. I think the Diego stream went for the last 5 minutes, so we didn't make the Sunday game, I think, because of that. But we're just looking for the lads to go out and play, Willie, and just to see what they were about and try to learn as much as we can about different individuals and different positions. And it's a bit like lads studying for leaving cert. You're cramming in as much information as you can in a short amount of time into the players, and then at the same time we're trying to make decisions fairly quickly based on limited contact time with the lads. But no, in fairness, now the game itself was it was hugely enjoyable. I know we won by two. We could have won by five. We also could have lost by five. But it was just an entertaining game, and both teams were evenly matched. But there was great spirit there on the show, which is what we all love to see when we're kind of watching these games. And that lads were delighted from both Sligo and Carlow to be representing their county and putting on the jersey and playing hard. We're good to be up and running, I suppose, Willie, you know.
Yeah, you were 5 points down at one stage. Like, I mean, usually for the last few years, if Carlow were 5 points down, that's their whole, the system scrambles. And I'm not asking you to criticise previous systems. You know, it got them to a decent enough level. But the fact that they were 5 points down and they were able to turn that around, you know what I mean, and score 217. Paul Broderick obviously scored 10, 5 from play. How did you get him back? The last I'd read about Paul is that he was taking the year out because of the pandemic. Well, I suppose the pandemic is over now.
Yeah, I suppose Niall Crew, Willie, and the local management, Victor Doyle, and from Rathfilly, and Simon Ray, from Simon would have played, of course, from Aero. The lads did chosen work in getting invitations out to fellas to come back into the squad. And I think we've 4 weeks done with the team now, and the first 2 weeks we just ran trial games, and I think we had to go to 60 players came in. Everybody was asked in once, Willie, and those who came in are obviously currently involved, and it was a very quick whittling down process for this particular season. But we were delighted with the number of lads that actually came in, and in fairness to Paul, came in then as well, and he's been working hard on his game too. Great to see him score those 10 points, but there's an awful lot of work done elsewhere on the field to kind of create those opportunities, and lads are working hard for one another. The 5 points down was we also went down to 14 men as well with a black card for 10 minutes in the second half. But the lads rallies when you're not, I suppose, stuck to a particularly defensive structure, and that does work quite well if you're keeping the game tight and there's only one in it maybe either way. But then when you're down by a couple of points, it can be difficult to break out of that structure, like you say, to go and chase the game. But the way we kind of had the lads set up was nearly man on man in some ways, Willie, and just letting them play and see what they were up to. So, it was a funny game. Now, if you're watching it, like Sligo deserved to probably win as much as Carlow did. But our couple of guys just pushed on for the last 10 minutes when we were down to 14 men, and there's an extra bit of spirit there that probably got us over the line.
Yeah, great stuff. So it's good to see Carlow putting up scores and maybe, you know, going out and play. I'd say Paul Broderick cannot believe his luck not being covered by three men on the other side of the field waiting for hand pass and kind of, you know, routine to come up and get to him. Having said, he has played well under that system as well. Division 4 is wide open now, so I'm sure you'll be a little bit disappointed with the start. Not your fault, or I'm sure the Carlow players, with the start they got, because there's definitely a chance with everybody beating everyone to have gotten out of that division. Waterford, like Connor says, refusing to go to Antrim, so that puts Antrim on 9 points. Wicklow play Wexford in the last round. They're the two top teams. So it'll be interesting to see how that division fares out. Speaking of Wexford, I saw a tweet from Kieran Ling after the game, Connor. And the tweet was, what better way to have major 100 appearance, to win the match, score a goal and make the GAA team of the week. Congrats, Doughty Walters. Now, I'm not going to entertain the hashtag he put in after it, because I don't want to get into that. I just thought it was interesting. Like, Doughty Walters was gone off the panel under Paul Galvin. Paul Galvin leaves. Now Doughty Walters is back. And, you know, most people would agree, whatever issue Paul Galvin had with him, most people would agree Doughty Walters would have a lot to offer an inter-county setup. And it just kind of got me thinking about players down through the years that a new manager just doesn't fancy, but still has a lot to offer. And I'm thinking of Davy Glennon. I know this is the football show and he's a hurler. He didn't make the Galway panel this year, so he's transferring to Westmead, Connor, you know, just to keep playing. He's only 29. I don't really have a problem with that, because it can be heartbreaking for players. I've seen it happen in Leash, where the new manager comes in, he doesn't fancy it. He could be there for 3 years and you have nothing for 3 years.
Yeah, and I'm sure Davy Glennon's got the indication that we've mentioned in the last couple of weeks, players that are maybe retiring, and we thought it was a bit strange, but then we kind of looked into it and maybe thinking that these lads have had conversations with the managers and are fairly sure they're not going to be involved in their plans. So I'm sure that Davy Glennon is the same with that. And like, what a huge addition to Westmeath if he's going to leave in Galway. Just the Dye Waters one, it was strange last year, I thought, and leaving strange, no less stranger now when you hear of him putting in a performance like that. Like, he's been one of Wexford's best players for years. That was a stranger. And I was just, when you mentioned the players there, that the players don't take a fancy to, like, in a Mayo context, it brings me back to Conor Mortimer and James Horan's first year. Didn't fit in the way he wanted to go, so he was cut from the panel. And, you know, that was very, very controversial at the time. You're talking about Mayo's all-time leading scorer, but it kind of worked out for Mayo in the end. But there's a few examples in that, and it's a strange one when managers don't take to a player, and sometimes they can do everything they can. They can be burning it up in training. They can be playing well for the club. And it's just the manager has made up his mind, and that's that.
Well, that's the thing. And I think there was always one in Laois under Mick O'Dwyer, Greg Ramsbottom, and he'd come to a trial match, he could score 110. And Mick just didn't fancy this fella at all. And he just never got in on the squad for the 4 years. And Conor Mortimer, like, I'd have a lot of times for James Horan, but my heart went out to Conor Mortimer at that time, because in Horan's first year, Conor had a few very good games. But whenever he wouldn't have a good game, he was just cast aside. Like, Horan pretty much pushed the chap out, like, you know what I mean? No matter what Mortimer did. Now, I know Mortimer ended up dropping off it and it looked bad for him, but he was probably at his wit's end at that stage. Horan probably shouldn't have even picked him to begin with, you know? And, like, the big one then for Dublin was Eamon Fennell, Jerry, your club mate. Like, Jim Gavin just... Eamon Fennell, I remember speaking to him at the gym in DCU, and Eamon Fennell was telling me that, well, I know he's not letting me in, but I've my own. I'm after getting a personal trainer, and I'm after getting the exact training that they're doing. I'm doing it on my own, and I want to send in results. Like, I was blown away by how much this fellow was desperate to get into this squad. And I was like, maybe Gavin will see how serious he is, but absolutely not. This just wasn't happening.
Like, it can be tough, like Conor said, when you're an established player, you've played in All-Ireland finals, not in the High Wars case, but he would have been involved. And I think he got to the All-Ireland semi-final under Jason Ryan a couple of years ago at Wexford. It can be quite difficult. So Eamon obviously saved my bacon in the All-Ireland 2011 final, and I ended up... bumping into Kieran Donaghy, and there was a throw up, and Eamon got the flick. And we went up and scored from it. And he obviously played a fair bit of 2012. And when Jim Gavin came in, he just made his decision. There were a couple of guys that, unfortunately for Eamon, weren't in the mix. And obviously, knowing Eamon well, I can certainly vouch to the above and beyond efforts that he put in to try to push himself back into the. Thoughts of Jim Gavin, but I suppose it just didn't happen. The All-Ireland was won in 2013, and there probably wasn't the need for Jim to go back and look at what he may have left behind, because the team had been successful, and obviously the rest is history now in terms of what Jim's achieved. So Dublin probably needed to perform poorly under Jim Gavin in his first year or two.
Yeah,
for Eamon to be given another nod.
Yeah, no, that was probably it. But before we get into the matches, lads, the AFL Grand Final is on this Saturday. We have Zach Toohey and we have Mark O'Connor in that. So best of luck to the two lads. They're the first two Irish players to play in the Grand Final since Ty Kennelly in 2006. They play for Geelong. Obviously, Zach was on the show recently. Mark's from Dingle and would have been a brilliant Kerry player, only he left after captain in the minors to an All-Ireland. They're playing Richmond. Richmond beaten by 26 points in round 17. Apparently, Geelong are pretty inconsistent this season. They can be absolutely brilliant. They have a great chance of beating Richmond, or they could be a bit flat on the day. So best of luck to the two lads, and anybody that wants to watch this, it's Saturday morning. I'm not sure what channel, Connor. I think you watch these, do you?
Sometimes you find them on what's the name? Is it Premier Sports or something like that? Or it could be they could even show them on BT. But there's definitely a way. As Zach himself pointed out, if you want to watch it, there's definitely a way. We have internet back in Ireland, so best of luck to Port Alouche's Zach Toohey in the final.
That was a good video, all right. And we're not going to encourage some sort of streams, but I'm sure if you mention Premier Sports and BT, I have neither.
Yeah.
So that's it. Best of luck to the Cats. Take it home, lads.
Geelong, the greatest team of all. We are Geelong, we're always on the ball. We play the game as it should be played.
Yeah, so we're at, like we were mentioning, lads, Kerry are most likely going to win the league on Saturday. We'll start off briefly with their game. Like, I mean, Declan Bonner has says going down to Kerry is something we're looking forward to, and it's going to give some of our lads an opportunity. And we'll be going down with a strong team looking for a performance that's going to get us a result. Now, reading between the lines there, when you hear a manager saying, Ger, our lad, or give some of our lads an opportunity. Do you know what I mean? This is a dead rubber for Donegal. They're playing Tyrone the following week. The reality is here, there'll be a few first teamers that could do with the game. They'll play, but there'll be a lot of fellas in the five subs coming on that would benefit from a start, you know, better than some of the other ones. The point I'm making is Donegal won't be at full strength for this one.
Yeah, you're dead right there. And it's a game that could be a bit of a banana skin for Kerry. They'll know what you just described there, that it won't be a full-strength Donegal team coming down. But the guys who will be given a chance to start, they'll be trying to push their own agenda to try to get into a Championship 26. And so they're going to come out with all guns blazing, trying to prove themselves. And if Kerry are any way switched off or feeling that this is going to be a bit of an easier game, they could get caught out. I know it's unlikely, but I've seen these things happen where you're kind of expected to win playing against a weakened team. But it's a huge journey, obviously, and fair play to Donegal for going again and actually fulfilling the fixture and bringing down a team and keeping the integrity of the competition going. A great opportunity for those fellas that mightn't necessarily be in the top 20 or top 15 to show what they're about.
Yeah, no, you make a decent point there about those five subs that come on getting a start, they'll be tearing all over the place. Kerry lads, yeah, would be worse marking them than marking someone like Ryan McHugh, who might be minding himself for the following week against Tyrone. But it's a perfect match for Kerry, though. I don't think Kerry are going to be demotivated in any way, Connor. Like, I mean, it's practically a league final for them at home. They have a 2-week break until the Cork game. It's a perfect tune-up game. I can imagine Kerry will not be doing what Donegal do. I can imagine Kerry will be playing the team they want to play against Cork, and Peter Keane will be telling them, lads, let's show me what you have in a championship context here.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not quite a dress rehearsal, obviously, for championship, but it's against high quality opposition coming up against Cork have a lot of momentum behind them. I know they only have one game, but from earlier on in the year. So this is an ideal game for Peter Keane to, as you said, it's an ideal tune up for them to make sure that they're operating at, you know, full power ahead of the Cork game in a couple of weeks' time. But that's it. It's ideal for Kerry in that respect. And as Gerard says, it's also ideal for Donegal in the other respect, because Donegal didn't want to be coming down to Kerry with their, you know, with their Division 1 status on the line had they not lost to Tyrone last week. So they'd be a little more relaxed in one way that they've that, you know, secured. But at the same time, it's brilliant that, you know, Declan Bonner will be loving the fact that he has, you know, 9 or 10 fellas potentially coming in that'll be, you know, putting it up to outside the certain starters in the Donegal team, that given the others something to think about. So, yeah, ideal. I just don't understand why it's at 2 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, no, desperate altogether. It must be something to do with television. And you're right, Kerry, you're getting much better preparation for this Cork game. Cork hammered Louth at home and then get a walkover. Like, Kerry, you're getting, you know, a tricky one away to Monaghan, and they're getting Donegal at home. Like, two perfect tune-up games for that championship. Anyways, we'll get to that. I just want to talk a little bit about the Kerry team, because we're going to talk about Dublin next and what Dublin could potentially change their team. Like, Kerry's team against Monaghan, the goalkeeper Ryan, Foley, Morley, O'Sullivan, their fullback line looks like it's actually settled, and Paul Murphy right half back. Two changes to their defence the last day was Peter Crowley, who's back. He was at centre back, and Gavin White has gone wing back. Now, I don't know about you, Ger, but Gavin White, as far as I'm concerned, is a wing back. He's a straight line runner. He's as fast as a hare. He was supposed to be man of the match up in Monaghan. He had a nightmare All-Ireland final playing wing forward on Jack McCaffrey. I've made the transition from wing back to wing forward. I would have been a different player to Gavin in that I would have played in the forwards with my club. I wouldn't have been a straight line runner. He almost puts blinkers on and just goes straight for goals. Him playing with his back to goal, you know, would be completely alien to him. He's a wing back and he's a huge weapon. And we see what a weapon Jack McCaffrey is from wing back, who, you know, when he gets ahead of steam like that, can break lines. I think Gavin White is a cert to start at left half back. And I think he will actually improve Kerry from launching some attacks from their half back line.
No, I look at the fair summation of Gavin White, Woolley. I remember watching the All Ireland final last year and Gavin getting cut out for Jack's goal when he tore through the middle from, I think, Clucko, one of his kick outs to the Hogan stand side. It is different if you're used to playing facing the play. It is different when you're asked to go and play kind of with your back to the opposition goal in the half forward line, and it does take an awful lot of time to be able to work that transition in your head. But then, like White's pace, his ability to break the line is something. And again, we've seen that. And I know you went through the games of the weekend and Monday show. We see the cornerbacks and halfbacks, once they're able to break these defensive lines, turn opposition defenders running towards their own goal, getting them behind, it does create a bit of havoc. And I think that would be a good platform for Kerry to be able to do that. But the way they're playing Kerry, they do have an awful lot of pace around the whole squad. They'll have a lot of confidence from getting to an All-Ireland final and pushing a Dublin team particularly close. And then they're in a position now to win the National League. So a lot of these lads are only getting better the whole time, and they're all fairly comfortable in possession. And there is still a lot of places up for grabs. And there's four or five fellas coming in from the last day, all being given good game time for Kerry. So it'll be like I think Connor said a couple of moments ago, Kerry will be looking to get a good championship intensity out of this game, albeit against a weakened Donegal side, and for fellas again to put their hands up and to nail down their pace for Cork in 2 weeks. And it should be an exciting game.
Yeah, no, I think this one, and I could be wrong on this, but I'd say Kerry are bankers to win this one, which obviously turns Dublin and Galway into a dead rubber. Now, I don't know, Ger, do you think Desi Farrell will be too disappointed about that? He really needs some games, because you have a situation where he was saying after the Meath game, he says, tonight was a benchmark. We hadn't any competitive games, any challenge games leading up to tonight. A couple of internal games just. I was kind of surprised a little bit at that. I know Dublin's internal games are very competitive. But, you've got a situation where Desi just needs a good, hard game rather than winning. Winning something is a bonus.
Yeah, it's all about winning championships, let's be honest. And I know we talked before when Desi was appointed, I'm not saying that it's a poison chalice, but how do you do any better than what was done before you?
Yeah.
And it says a lot about the man that he actually did come in and take the role after the five in a row that was won.
Yeah, he'd have been better off David Moyes taking that job for a year and then Desi could come in after him.
Yeah, no. In fairness, the team that played the weekend against Meath, a lot of kind of new faces into the squad. Some of them I'd be obviously usually familiar with from the Dublin club scene, and he is trying a couple of players. I don't think it was the strongest team. That's just would be my own view, but at the same time, he is looking to see what lads are made of, and the game the weekend. There's nothing beats actually playing a match, and that's where you learn most about your players and about your selection and everything else, and that it's not a game of meaning in terms of winning the league or staying up from relegation. I don't think that matters too much to Desi and to the lads. They'll be looking to get as many things right as possible before they come into the Leinster Championship, and again, they're also in a fortunate position, Dublin, that the way the Leinster Championship just hasn't been as strong for the last decade and a half. That he has another two, certainly, games to try and get things right before they get to a Leinster final or an All-Ireland semi-final.
Yeah, no, he definitely does. Like, I mean, Kildare and Meath are at a decent level. Like, Dublin wouldn't want to be sleepwalking in. I think Kildare are better than Meath, personally. I think I keep backing Kildare and I keep backing these Armagh teams, and they're not making the step up that I was hoping. But I'm sticking to them because I'm too stubborn to stop change my opinion of them. I saw Oisín McConville saying, he was on the Examiner podcast, I think. I just saw an article in the Examiner, Conor, and he says, I think, again, there's too much of a rush to judge a team based on a bloody league game after coming off a 7-month layoff. And as Desi said, hadn't any competitive games done. But Oisín is reading into it. So he says, I think if they're going one-on-one defending against Kerry the way they defended on Saturday, I think Kerry would absolutely rip them apart. And I watched Donegal and they would do the exact same thing. They're going to have to come up with some sort of a plan. I was just looking at that quote, like, and I mean, Oisín McConville's an excellent pundit. It was like, they went man-to-man against Kerry last year in the All-Ireland final and beat them. Like, I mean, that's the way Kerry and Dublin will leave you one-on-ones at the back and they'll just back themselves to outscore you. Like, I mean, I don't know, Conor. I just thought that that was a really weird thing to say. Number one, this was the first game back against Meath in that context. And number two, they have proven in much harder games that they can handle Kerry in an All-Ireland final twice, you know, or maybe not handle their forwards, but their own forwards be able to outscore the Kerry forwards.
No, absolutely. Like, we've seen the evidence there in the last couple of years with both against Kerry and against Mayo. When teams were happy to go toe-to-toe with Dublin were happy to go toe-to-toe with them, and they invariably ended up on top. So, like, there's Dublin will have no issue doing that again. Strange comment just in the back of, like, he made some very good points on Monday about the games on Monday, about them being how hard it is to read anything into them on the back of there being a 7-month break. And that, like, I'd even read less into that because, as Desi Farrell said, if we take him at his word that they haven't had any challenge games in any sort of competitive games whatsoever. So you can only read so much into, what, like, the Dublin's game against Meath the last day. And as Gerard hinted at, I think Desi would have been maybe looking to see outside of his, like, maybe four or five fellas starting that wouldn't be traditionally starting. So how are these lads going to shape up? Are they going to be ready to be thrown into Leinster Championship against Kildare and Meath? But, like, I wouldn't, not only would I be not worrying about Dublin's ability to go man on man against the likes of Kerry, I'd also be confident of Desi Farrell's ability to come up with some sort of plan if man on man wasn't working or was working in Kerry's favour. And I think you have to give Dublin far more evidence than one game against Meath to see what Dublin are going to be like later on in the year.
Yeah, exactly. The problem is trying to analyse what Desi's trying to do with them, Gerard. Like Conor said, definitely wouldn't be judging him against Meath, wouldn't be judging him on the first few league games. But from what the first few league games and the Meath game, I don't know, without having watched tapes back and watched them too closely, you don't see any huge stamp of his that has been different. Like, I don't know, from watching him, I'm only speculating completely here. It's like Desi went in and said, lads, do you know the way you were playing under Jim Gavin? Can you keep doing that? Can you just kind of continue that on?
Keep on winning, yeah?
Yeah, keep on winning.
But look at it, it's a winning formula.
Yeah.
And obviously you need the right ingredients to be able to bring it about, which Dublin have just had in abundance for the last while, and Desi isn't arrogant or stupid enough to go away from everything that was good about how Jim Gavin set up the squad. So I think if you can integrate a couple of players, new players into that system, it brings just a bit of freshness and competition to the squad. And I think that would be probably one of the areas he would be looking to kind of strengthen. Is to not necessarily go away from a winning formula, but if you can find other people that can go in and do and perform those roles, it just brings about a new energy to the whole place. Because again, how the lads have managed to keep it going for so many years and to keep themselves motivated is a huge achievement. But when you do bring in fresh players, it just kind of lifts the whole thing, and I'd say that's probably all we're going to see from Dublin this year. Woolley would be an introduction of a couple of new players into the setup to kind of freshen it up, but it's a winning formula, like in the same way Kerry and Mayo over the years, the great games with Dublin, you know, the blueprint that both Kerry and Mayo have is a blueprint to beat the way Dublin have played. But they just haven't, again, had enough of the right ingredients or experience to be able to get them over the line. So that's how I would see Dublin going this year, Willie.
I know the fresh faces, but as far as I can see, the fresh faces will be in the squad rather than the team. Because look at this forward line. Like Niall Scully, Kieran Kilkenny, Brian Howard, Mannion, Conn and Dean Rock. There's nobody breaking in there. Like, as far as I'm concerned. And then if depending on where to play James McCarthy, there could be a couple of spaces in the defence potentially opening up, especially with Jack McCaffrey gone. Say if you have Fenton and McCarthy in midfield, for example, now you have a space or two in the backs. Like, is Robert McDade going to get in wing back, you know, as a replacement with Jack McCaffrey? He's very fast, but like, it wouldn't be, from the couple of games I've seen him, the Dublin County final and the Meath match, wouldn't be a patch on Jack.
Yeah, well, look at Jack is obviously just a super
one of the greats, yeah.
Yeah, one of the greats. So no one's going to get close to Jack. Robbie would have been in UCD with us as well, one of Sigerson Woolley, and lovely fella, solid fella, extremely committed. He'd be pushing hard to get in there. I don't know if he's going to make it when you're getting to the latter stages of a championship in Croke Park. But that remains to be seen. But where there are a couple of options is certainly one at midfield and probably two in the defence, depending on, as you mentioned, where James McCarthy plays.
Yeah.
And I'd say a lot of the players will know that. At the same time, the six forwards you mentioned, fellas pick up knocks. Watching the game, Dean is obviously flying again, and Kieran Kilkenny is as busy as ever, and Conn chipping in with his couple of points and looking fairly comfortable and moving well. Unless these lads pick up significant knocks, that probably is going to be your six forwards or a version of it. So yeah, maybe a couple of extra faces midfield and then the half back or maybe a full back line.
Yeah, I see Brian Howard has a new look, some beard he has. I thought he looked Latino or something with that beard, Jared. I don't know if you have any comments on that.
Yeah. Brian probably was feeling a bit lazy in the lockdown, I say.
But it looked much darker than his actual hair colour. It was like it was black or something. He had it dyed.
He could have been using his grandfather's shoe polish or something.
Maybe, yeah. He looked like a chimney sweep, maybe, or something. Connor, where do you see? Like, you see, you have one merchant then to come into the backs. You have Davy Byrne, you have Fitzsimons, you have John Small, Johnny Cooper, all bankers. Merchant to come in. There's potentially, I think, one position in the backs up for grabs, and that's if James McCarthy plays a midfield. I don't know. I'm trying to think of the challenges for Desi. Is to keep, obviously, one huge one is not allowing Dublin switch off mentally when the five in a row is done. You know, I suppose that's the big one for Desi. I think challenging these lads mentally, what's going to get these lads switched on? What's going to get inside their heads this year to keep these lads as focused as they clearly were, you know, on the drive for five?
That's a big one, Willie, to be honest. But like, the only thing that might help that is the fact that, like, it's a shortened season, so you won't be mentally worn down from, you know, a season that might normally last from February through to the end of September.
Yeah.
You just have to give it your all for, you know, the 6 weeks or the 8 months, and it's easier to maintain focus for that period of time, let's say. But I was just looking at the team the last day, it looks to me that Howard might come in alongside Fenton in midfield, James McCarthy go back to the half back line, then you're getting a familiar look. I'm just thinking, like with Jack gone and with Jeremy Connolly gone as well, is the firepower that Dublin are going to be able to bring on from the bench as kind of strong as it's been in recent years, and it's been a huge kind of boost for them as well.
Yeah.
Like Paddy Small started last day, like on the back of the club championship, I would have thought that like he's kind of one of the prime candidates to start. But I've watched Dublin come to the club championship for a few years, and I would have said the same of Colin Basquell, and he hasn't quite been able to kind of make his imprint because the Dublin panel is so strong. But I don't know. That's the, like, just going back to what Gerard was saying earlier, you'd want a massive ego, and Desi Farrell obviously doesn't have one, to come in and think that you're going to do something completely different.
Yeah.
Put a Desi Farrell stamp on this team that would be different from a team that's probably going to go down as the greatest of all time. Just won five in a row. So listen, like, that's my one concern, and it wouldn't be a concern because I hope Dublin are slightly weakened, but with maybe that their bench mightn't be as strong this year with a couple of retirements and with a couple of lads gone off the panel that has been the last few years.
Yeah, well, they have won all Ireland without Jack and Diarmuid before. What did you make of the Connolly retirement, Ger? Have you spoken to him?
I haven't spoken to him since club championship Woolley finished up. As far as I knew, he was going for it again, and Connor's point of the shortened season was probably something that was suiting Diarmuid and could suit Dublin as well. So I actually don't know. He keeps himself to himself, Woolley, does Diarmuid, and he may have just woke up one day and said, you know what, I'm happy enough, and I don't have the motivation to go and do it again. So I'm grateful for everything, and I concentrate on the club for the latter parts of his career. So
yeah.
33, he put an awful lot of work into Dublin during his career, and he's obviously had a funny couple of years, kind of on and off the field, and trying to get his head right again to get the best out of himself. But intercounty football and playing for Dublin is a huge commitment, and then players with Diarmuid's ability are kind of enigmas in some ways, and they attract so much attention, good, bad, and indifferent, and a lot of it is kind of just unwelcome attention to the type of person that Diarmuid is. So I'd say, yeah, he probably just woke up and said, yeah, I'm happy with my loss, and thanks for everything, and good luck. It's probably as clinical as that.
Do you think there could have been a conversation with Desi where Desi would have said, look, Diarmuid, I need that impact sub role, and Diarmuid's like, ah, Jesus, I've done that last year, or do you think a conversation like that might have happened, or your instinct is that maybe he just woke up one day and said, and I don't really fancy it?
Desi, I would be surprised if he said that we're looking at you for that impact role. I would have said all bets were on the table in terms of if you're in good form and you're moving well, you're going to be in.
Yeah.
Start. And Desi would want everyone involved playing. And I suppose when we've all finished their own kind of careers, when the bit of motivation kind of goes, you have to go. You have to step away. And I suppose in Desi's point of view, if he has to coerce too much a guy to remain in a panel, that's not the right thing to do for the team either. And you have to let the man off and focus on the guys who are still in the headspace and looking to progress on, you know.
Yeah. So does he hang around with the club lads, Diarmuid, or would he have his own mates outside of football?
Oh, yeah, no, checking the Vinnie's lads, we would be fairly tight now, so probably with a couple of lads are all right, yeah.
All right, okay. So I was just wondering, does he have like another kind of life outside of the game that he, you know what I mean? He tries to stay away from it when he's not playing.
Yeah. He'd be a tight group, with St. Vincent's Woolley, and you know yourself over the years, coming to big games where family members and fellas in work are wishing you well, they nearly take up a lot of energy from you. So if you keep things tight with fellas who actually know football or are part of the team, but then there's actually zero football talk nearly goes on a lot of the time, and you feel,
yeah, true,
don't you?
Yeah, because nobody actually wants to talk about it. Yeah,
that's not good either.
That's a good point. If your friends outside the game, you're being tortured by it. Here, what's going on in there?
Who do you sit beside in the bus? Grown men, like.
Yeah, no, it's true. The other big one, Connor, which interests you, is the relegation battle, Mayo and Tyrone. Like, I mean, Mayo giving themselves a great chance. I fancied them to beat Tyrone. Obviously, it'll be a difficult one, a completely different game against Tyrone. We saw how Donegal handled Tyrone. It's to kind of slow everything down, you know, play on the outside, try and pick out a pass. Not the greatest to watch. Not going to have you on the edge of your seat. You find yourself flicking through your phone for periods of time when those games are on. It'll be interesting to see how Mayo's much high tempo, injecting pace into the game, trying to get the ball forward as fast as possible, how that works against Tyrone. It'll be a very good clash of styles, having watched how Donegal deal with it and how Mayo will deal with it.
Yeah, it's going to be night and day compared to the last day, Woolley, and I think Mayo are going to have to be very the Mayo are going to have to be very patient. Like Tyrone have had a couple of good results down in Castlebar in the last couple of years. They gave us hiding a couple of years ago, playing that very kind of patient defensive system. Mayo got a bit restless, got a bit ahead of themselves, left a lot of gaps at the back, and were punished for it. So I would imagine that Mickey Hart is going to be looking to play something similar, especially having watched. I mean, if you watch Mayo the last day, the one thing you're thinking, and you brought this up on Monday, is, well, deny their half backs and their attacking backs the oxygen of being able to run into space. Denying Mark Moran at centre forward the amount of possession that he got, and then just coming up with, I'm sure they'll have a plan in place to try and stymie the ball coming in Jaden O'Shea, and when it does come in to break it down too. But I just think off the, like, Mayo seem to be playing with a lot of confidence, like huge confidence. Obviously the last day again it was against a poor Galway side, and you can't read too much into it, but the young fellas that did play well, the Owen McLaughlins, Mark Moran I mentioned already, Oisín Mullen, they've still got huge confidence from their performance and wanting to carry that momentum into the championship. So just on the back of, I wasn't too impressed with Tyrone on Sunday either. And just on the back of that, I would fancy Mayo to get over the line, but like by a couple of points, I think, because there's so much at stake.
Yeah, it'll definitely be an interesting one. Division 2, as we know, is a very exciting division. At the bottom, I'll start with first, if Leash beat Fermanagh, they should stay up, because you'd be fancying Armagh to beat Clare, although you wouldn't be putting too much money on Armagh these days. You know, sometimes Armagh can let you down. It's between Leash and Fermanagh and Clare to see who goes down. No, it's between Leash and Clare to see who goes down. Fermanagh are gone down after losing last weekend. At the top, it's a little bit more interesting because Roscommon have had a positive case. So there was a statement released by the Roscommon County Board, and it says members of the panel that are close contacts are isolating. So we don't know how many that are, there are there, lads. You know, like, I mean, you'd probably have fancied Roscommon, but this could be three players, it could be four players, it could be five players, depending if they're coming in a car, or I'm not too sure, you know, what deems them close contacts. I thought travelling to training probably would, which would mean it wouldn't be all that many close contacts. So we'll have to see what happens there. You'd imagine Fermanagh or Roscommon are true. There was a really interesting one, but even Westmeath, if they beat Kildare, can get up there and get promoted if Armagh don't beat Clare. So there's loads to play for in Division 2. But there was one comment by Mickey Graham, which I thought was very interesting. They're obviously playing Roscommon, and he said he was talking about getting promoted. And just in a bit of context to this quote, of the 10 teams that were promoted to Division 2 between 2015 and 2019, six of them, Down, Cavan twice, Kildare, Roscommon and Meath, have all immediately been relegated back down. And probably based on that, Mickey Graham said, at this moment in time, Cavan have a lot of young lads coming through. And you saw against Kildare last weekend, we had a lot of debutants. So if we could stay where we are, our goal at the beginning of the year was to maintain Division 2 status. If we achieve that goal, we can give the younger lads more game time in Division 2. Whereas in Division 1, you're coming up against the best teams in the country. And sometimes it's a big ask for young lads to come in at that level. I thought it was a classic from Mickey Graham, classic honesty, Ger, considering that's exactly how I would be talking. Like, I mean, maybe for somebody, you know, a team maybe like Meath, who haven't been there for so long, looking to get up and test themselves, they wanted to get in there. Cavan have been there, they know what it's like, they want to try out a few young lads, and we're all right in Division 2 here.
Yeah, fair play to him. It is fairly honest. You can see where he's coming from. I don't know. For me, the sooner you get up there and experience what it's like at the top table, the better you are able to understand as a player the required intensity that you experience in these big games, the physicality and the relentlessness of Division 1, and particularly the decision making is something that I would say is a big part between some of the teams in Division 1, 2, and then the lower tiers. But, if they were to go up, are you taking a bet that they're one of the teams to come down in 2021? Yeah, you would probably take that bet. But at the same time, you have to be playing against the better teams week in, week out. And that's the only way that you'll ever improve your chances of winning provincial titles or getting to the latter stages of All-Ireland series, you know?
Yeah, no, you're right. I think it depends on where the trajectory of the team is at or where the development of the team is at, you know, but I definitely don't agree that every team is desperate to get into Division One. Not all the time, you know, it depends on where they're at. So it is an honest comment, definitely from...
Certainly very honest, all right, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Division Three, lads, there's not much happening. Down have got promoted without kicking a ball. Like, I mean, they're done based on a walkover last week and Longford's walkover against Cork. So they're laughing. There's only a bit of excitement in Division Three down at the very bottom. Leitrim play Tipperary. You'd have to fancy Tipperary strongly there at that stage. And to be honest, I wouldn't be shedding any tears from Leitrim. They didn't even fulfil the fixture last week. I would say that they'll just be back in Division 4 after getting beaten by Tipperary, and I don't think too many people will feel too sorry for them. They tried so long to get out of Division 4 to get up into Division 3, and they don't bother sending a team up for a Division 3 game. So look, I won't be shedding too many tears for Leitrim when they go back down. Loud are gone back down. Their captain's worried about testing. I don't know. So, like, I mean, Leitrim and Loud are the two being relegated from Division 3, and we've mentioned Division 4, lads. So that's it. Last round of league games, and the following Thursday we'll be looking forward to the championship, Ger.
Great stuff. Yeah, and it's very exciting in fairness, and I think it's very important, Woody, like yourself and lads who are in the media, that we continue to give a positive outlook of the importance of Gaelic football and hurling for society as a whole, and the talking points that it brings about, the excitement that it brings about, the stagging that it brings about. I think it's far too easy just to say, oh, we can't have this, we can't have this. I think we have to keep a positive agenda. COVID is not going away anytime soon. We're going to have to learn to live with it. I think there'll be moments of level 4 and 5 over the next probably 4 or 5 months until we actually get a vaccine sorted. But people are just going to have to be positive and get on with it and see the value that inter-county football and hurling brings to the whole country.
Amen to that. Right, okay, we'll talk to you on Monday. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back to their county jerseys.
But these fellas, they get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their houses for 10 years.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.